Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we have Josh Wish. He's the president and executive director of Holomua Collective, and he's here to talk about remote work and the Senate Concurrent Resolution 184 that went through the legislative session last year. Josh, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thanks so much, Bert. Happy to be here.
And, you know, Josh, this is, I think, first time you're on Bite Marks Cafe, so I want to give you a chance to tell us a little bit about yourself and what exactly is Holomua Collective?
Hey, thanks, Bert. I appreciate it. So Holomua Collective is a nonprofit, a locally based nonprofit right here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And our mission is really keeping all local working families in Hawaii by making sure that they can afford to stay. And we do that through a few different methods. One of the big things that we do is we spend a fair amount of time bringing together people from different sectors, for-profit, nonprofit, government, and labor, to talk about big policy issues affecting the state, specifically affecting people's cost of living, and bringing together a lot of folks who are not necessarily always in the room together, who don't necessarily always see things the same way, mm-hmm. and try to foster both understanding and collaboration, and then ultimately get those folks to talk about what might be some policy solutions that could help address cost of living and keep local working families in Hawaii. So we do a lot of that work. We also do a fair amount of work trying to get people to better understand how government in Hawaii operates. We try to help demystify government at both the state and the county level. And the idea there is that if people better understand how it works, then they can do more to get involved and help make positive changes. And we also just try to provide better data on what the cost of living looks like for people in Hawaii. So, for instance, if any of your listeners go to our website, which is holomuacollective.org, they'll see right on the front page a survey that we pretty recently released on cost of living in Hawaii. And if I can share just for a couple of moments about some of the findings from that. So we recently surveyed about 1,500 employed local residents who work for a variety of organizations in primarily the for-profit and nonprofit sectors in Hawaii to ask about cost of living issues. And we found some pretty striking things. One of those was a key question that we asked people was, do you think you're going to have to move to a less expensive state? And when we asked that, 70% of people said either yes or I'm unsure that they're going to have to move to a less expensive state. And of those, almost half said they're going to have to move within the next 5 years. And what one of the things that's striking about this is, again, these are locally employed residents, and the majority of them are earning what most people would be considered a pretty good living wage. The majority of the people in this survey make over $100,000 a year in a median household size of three. Wow. So think, like, one example we've used is think like two local school teachers and their kids. And so we're trying to provide more data like that. So the kind of things that we're working on, the kind of decisions we're trying to make, and the policies we're proposing are based on real data.
You know, I'm going to have you on the show more often because this is a real interesting segment of the marketplace. Now, you said you had about 1,500 survey participants. Was there a particular demographic? I was going to sort of say, was it sort of the ALIS population? But it sounds like it was even a little bit higher up the economic ladder, right?
It's probably, I think it would be safe to consider this almost a complement to the ALIS survey. Mm-hmm. And if people go and take a look, they'll be able to take a look at the demographics that are in the survey. There are even dashboards that they can access to play around with the data a little bit and try to find some more information. But I think it was 64% of the respondents make $100,000 a year or more. So we definitely have people, of course, a meaningful number of people who are making less than that. But one of the things that I think is striking about this is I think sometimes people do think, well, the ALIS survey results are sobering, but maybe not. That includes myself and people that I know. I think when you look at these kind of survey results and you pair them with the ALIS survey, mm-hmm. it shows that there are a lot of people who are in this kind of situation. And one of the things that I also found striking about the survey results was we also asked just some open-ended questions. And I don't know about you, Bert, but for me, when I get a survey that asks the open-ended questions, 9 times out of 10, I don't bother answering them mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I think I've got, you know, too much to do. But we had hundreds of responses come in, which to me really felt kind of like a cry for help that people wanted to spend the additional time to answer these open-ended questions. And we were asking things like, what do you do to stretch your income? And we were getting, again, really sobering responses ranging from I skip meals to I can't afford to have kids.
No, wow. That's a pretty serious response.
Very serious response. And what was interesting, too, is these folks are overwhelmingly longtime local residents.
Mm-hmm.
People with deep ties to the community. And when you look at the survey results, people who also have really high levels of job satisfaction. So longtime local residents, happy with their jobs, with a shocking number who are seriously considering leaving the state within the next few years because they can't afford to stay anymore. And the overwhelming cost driver for them was housing.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have a pretty good cross-section across the entire state from representation from each of the neighbor islands?
We did. We had a good cross-section. Because of the population, I believe most of the respondents were still from Oahu,
mm-hmm.
Just because of how our population is shaped here. But yes, we did have responses from across the islands.
And then is this the primary survey respondees that help to inform what we will be talking about in terms of the Senate Concurrent Resolution 184?
You know, there is almost certainly overlap, but they are a different set of respondents. So there are probably people who are represented in both of them, but they are a different set of respondents.
So I do want to, you know, kind of get into a little bit about, well, actually a lot more into Senate Concurrent mm-hmm. Resolution 184, SCR 184, mm-hmm. and how Holomua got involved with that, because it does very much now sound like this is right up your wheelhouse. So I want to hold that thought. We'll be right back after a short break to continue our conversation with Josh Wish, President and Executive Director of Holomua Collective. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Bert Lum, and if you're just joining us, we're talking to Josh Wish, President and Executive Director of Holomua Collective, and we're talking about remote work and SCR 184. And of course, right before the break, Josh, you were giving us a pretty good idea as to what Holomua is kind of focused on, and mm-hmm. it's about looking at how is, you know, this particular population that you're surveying expressing their concerns about the cost of living in Hawaii. And I want to, you know, sort of pivot a little bit about in terms of how Holomua Collective got involved with this SCR 184. And maybe you can explain what was the purpose of 184 and how it kind of ties into remote work, which is an area that, you know, we've talked about on this show quite often. But seeing Holomua get involved with it kind of gave me a good feeling that, you know, others are very interested in this segment of the opportunity. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's right, Bert. And the way that Holomua got involved in this last year was, I mentioned that one of the things that we do is we bring together people from different sectors to discuss major policy issues mm-hmm. facing the state. And we do these in-person cross-sector convenings between for-profit, non-profit, government, and labor. And during the course of those convenings last year, there were a number of things that had come up in our conversations. And one of the things that was identified was we're talking about the number of state government positions that are vacant. I think it's about over a quarter of state government positions have been vacant over the past couple of years. And that's leading to a lot of challenges, like mm-hmm. overworking of current employees, burnout, inefficiency, and then noting some related challenges. Like, we know that there are a lot of systems and operations in state government that could do with some updating, that government salaries are not always competitive for a place that is one of the most expensive places to live in the world. And so as we were taking a look at that, one thing that was being discussed was, is there a way to kind of pair up some of these things into a possible solution? So when you're looking at a situation where you've got some places in this very expensive state that might have some lower housing costs, but also have lower access to good paying employment, is there a way, for instance, to pair those two things together?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if you've got someone who's living in a rural area or just another area with lower housing costs, but can't necessarily directly access a good paying job, could you use a tool like remote work
mm-hmm.
to pair that person up to a good paying state or county job so that they can stay where they're living, stay in their community, and stay in Hawaii? And as that was being discussed, there was this original idea for a bill to try to take a look at that. And as we were talking with legislators and working its way through the legislative process, as often happens, the legislators just want to see some more data first. And that's really where this resolution first came from, was that the legislature agreed, and they mentioned this in the reso, that identifying both state jobs that are viable prospects for remote work in areas of the state where housing is affordable, yet high-paying jobs are not readily available, and pairing those would meaningfully address the state's lack of affordable housing in certain areas. And so the Department of Human Resources Development was asked to survey a population of organizations to take a look at how local organizations in different sectors are currently using remote work,
mm-hmm.
what lessons learned there have been from that, and try to, and a key part of this, again, was focusing on local organizations, see what they've been doing, how have they been successfully doing it, what kind of best practices have they put into place, and what lessons learned could be shared to help try to jumpstart something like that.
So was there a survey that you had, put together that specifically asked some of those questions of this new sample of people, right? Because the first set that you described was really kind of specific about cost of living. In this particular
right.
survey, what were some of the questions that you asked to get an insight into, you know, the opportunity for remote work?
Well, and so this is where we were assisting the Department of Human Resources Development with doing this survey.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be putting this report out to the legislature very, very soon. And we were asking things such as, for managers, what kind of pieces do they have to have in place to adequately supervise and provide the support necessary to people who are working in remote jobs in their companies? And again, let me note, too, that this was a mix of we had state agencies that participated, we had labor unions that participated, nonprofit organizations, and for-profit organizations that all participated in doing this. And they all got the same survey so that we could try to get a good mix of responses that would be across the board. And it was everything, again, from how long has your company been engaging in remote work? So we kind of see the range of people who were doing this before COVID and organizations that only adopted it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of training was provided for supervisors who were training remote workers? How do you maintain team cohesion when you have a hybrid workforce? So a pretty robust set of survey questions that we gave to folks to provide and give us some feedback on.
You also, I guess, engaged with UHERO to identify particular areas that may have a lower kind of housing cost opportunity, you know, in on the neighbor islands. Was that
correct.
Something that mm-hmm. Obviously that's something that's key to finding the right elements that could, you know, foster a remote work environment?
Correct. And UHERO provided that information that's going to be folded into this report and part of the report that PHRD is going to be reporting to the legislature.
Mm-hmm. And I think also coupled with this, the timing is really good, too, because with some of the connectivity that is being enabled through some of the federal funding to connect homes with fiber and internet access, these particular areas could have now the infrastructure that enables them to fully participate in a remote work kind of environment.
I think that's exactly right. And because these areas are going to be identified in the report that goes to the ledge, we'll be able to take a look at those areas and see, do these areas have the kind of broadband connectivity that's necessary for them to be able to fully participate in this? And or which areas need to get a little bit of additional backup? Which areas do we need to focus on that might not have that yet, that we need to make sure that the right amount of broadband infrastructure is going in to support them?
Now, you had mentioned that originally this was supposed to be a bill, and it sort of pivoted into a Senate concurrent resolution. And mm-hmm. in the vehicle for a resolution, do you feel that it can achieve sort of like the same level of awareness of how we might want to start to really seriously consider remote work?
I think it can. One of the great things about the concurrent resolution mm-hmm. is that it does provide a good vehicle very often for state departments to go and provide some of the data that the legislature is often asking for when they ask for these kind of resolutions, and give us some more evidence, some more quantitative information and qualitative information that we can use to make better decisions. So some of the things I can share, for instance, that came out of it,
mm-hmm.
the organizations that we surveyed, when you put them all together, all told, they employ over 20,000 employees locally.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got organizations who are representing a broad range of folks. Some of the top line numbers that came out of it, in terms of the maximum number of days that employees are allowed to engage in fully remote, hybrid, or telework, we got a median figure of 3 days. In terms of how many years the organizations that have been participating in this kind of work, the median figure is 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the maximum percentage of employees that are engaged in fully remote, hybrid, or telework based on this, it's 45%. And so that is a snapshot of where things are right now. And why I think this is so important, why this data didn't really exist before, is you might be able to get some of that kind of information on a nationwide basis, but this is really laser focused on local organizations. And so that's one of the things that I think is really useful here. And when the report does come out and people get a chance to really dig through it and take a look at everything from the identified best practices for managers and supervisors to the identified best practices for measuring productivity, some of the lessons learned, some of it might be surprising, some of it might just make common sense and you think, yeah, I get that. But now we've actually have this that is based on and backed up by actual local data.
Now, I do want to ask you, in terms of the study, what would you, I guess, optimistically hope that it achieves, you know, once it actually gets officially published? So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Josh Wish, President and Executive Director of Holomua Collective. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Ulupono Initiative and Ruby Tuesday Hawaii.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum, right here on Hawaii Public Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Josh Wish, President and Executive Director of Holomua Collective, and we're talking about remote work and the study that was recently done as a result of Senate Concurrent Resolution 184. And right before the break, Josh, you were doing a really good job of sort of quantifying some of the results that came out of the study. And it sounds, quite hopeful that, there is an indication, a strong indication that remote work is of interest, especially, you know, whether it's in a hybrid format or, you know, I think you mentioned 3 days was the median, and you know, many of the companies were doing this probably over the course of the pandemic, you know, the last 4 years. So the opportunity is obviously there. And I like the other fact that you mentioned, that Holomua Collective is kind of a nonprofit in place to help understand how some of this legislative process might work to achieve some of these goals. And you mentioned also earlier that, you know, there was a bill and it kind of pivoted into a resolution. And now with some of the information that is going to be shared with the as a result of the study, what is a typical path that a resolution might take, you know, going forward? How does it influence the right people?
Sure, it's a great question, Bert. So broadly speaking, once the a lot of resolutions like this will ask for a report to be given to the legislature shortly before the next legislative session opens up. Mm-hmm. And so this report will be coming out soon. And it'll be on the legislative website. And I fully anticipate that Holomu will probably put a link to it on our website as well, so people can go read all the results. And there can be a number of things that come out of reports like this. One, of course, anybody in the legislature could take a look at the report and see if it might form the basis of a legislative proposal that they would want to put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Holomua does not have something this year that we're putting in based on this, but it is available for anyone to take advantage of for that purpose. Also, we know that there are a number of state and county agencies that are already working to take better advantage of remote work and to use it as a recruitment and a retention tool. And this kind of report, which has new, fresh data based on local organizations, hopefully can, where appropriate, help accelerate that. And for the organizations that are already doing it, help them do it even better. And this is a public report, so any organization anywhere in the state that wanted to take advantage of it could. Mm-hmm. And there are good reasons for that. I mean, so just to, kind of as a reminder to your audience, the cost of living is obviously very high here. I started this conversation with you by talking about our cost of living survey that we've recently done. And telework does present an opportunity for people to save money. It can mitigate expenses with everything relating from housing to transportation to commuting. It also helps local employers, and that's everyone from the state to the county to local companies, to recruit from a broader talent pool. So, for example, if you're a state agency and you've got some good jobs that people don't need to physically be in a state office for in Honolulu, and you find someone who would be a perfect fit for that job who is in Pahoa or Molokai, this is the kind of thing that could help you bring them on board, bring in someone who's great for the job, and help those folks stay in their community, stay in their house, and help strengthen their local community.
Well, you know, you know pretty well that the group that I'm in is pretty focused on broadband and digital equity. And when we talk about digital equity, a lot of it is in the rural communities. And, you know, you describe perfectly some of the conversations that we have in terms of, you know, if you want to have a good sense of what's happening in those rural communities, you don't necessarily have to have everybody, you know, working and going to work in Honolulu. You would want them to be, you know, pretty well distributed in some of the key, especially on the neighbor islands. And so you have much easier access to the people that are actually working in those communities, and you have a better idea as to what is the, you know, what is the need in those communities. So it makes total sense. And I am hoping that, you know, in terms of will you be going out there and actually presenting on this study, or is that pretty much the extent of your role, is to, you know, fulfill the need of the resolution, do the study, publish the study, and then you know, let the sort of organic nature of where it goes from there take over? Or do you plan to also go out and do some actual you know, in person, let's say, overviews of what the study reveals?
Well, I want to coordinate with the folks at the Department of Human Resources Development on that, because this is their report that they're providing to the legislature. if we can help them with helping to get the information out, that's something certainly that we would be happy to do. I think this would certainly fit into the category of us also trying to provide more data on the cost of living and what it takes for local residents to stay in Hawaii. So if that's a way that we could partner with them on that, then you know we'd certainly be happy to. And I think some of the things in here that is going to be useful to anybody who wants to take part in this is just some of the takeaways and lessons learned. I'll share just a couple with you. And again, encourage folks once this report is out for everybody to read it. For instance, we know that from some of the respondents that there is sometimes a bit of a disconnect between people who have a perception that teleworking employees might not be productive, and that being able to show the production of those people who really are working hard remotely can help counter that kind of perception, right? So it's the production countering the perception piece.
Mm-hmm.
We also heard from a lot of folks that having remote workers in some ways actually help them better supervise and manage their in-office employees, because they realize that, well, wait a second, I don't necessarily always know what the person who's sitting at a console in another room is doing. And so I need to be providing the same kind of supervision and training and opportunities and evaluation for those people as I do for someone who's working from home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it kind of provided a little bit of an insight of, we could actually be doing a better job with this across the board and then providing that kind of consistency. And a big thing that came up over and over again was just communication. That was a huge part. Just communicating with your employees who are working in the office, with people who are working from home, with people who are working hybrid, and making sure that you are both giving them what they need to do their jobs well, and also giving them the feedback on how they're doing their jobs. And so this has actually in some ways provided an opportunity, it seems, for people to better manage and better support people who are working in a variety of those environments.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the point that you made about communication, I mean, there's with the technology, there's so many more ways of communicating and staying in touch. I think this is a right time for something like this to, a study like this to kind of reveal that. Now, Josh, where can people go to find out more about what you do and the future of this particular study coming out of SCR 184?
Absolutely. For people who want to learn more about Holomua Collective, they can go to our website. That is holomuacollective.org, HOLOMUACOLLECTIVE.ORG, holomuacollective.org. And they can also email me at josh@holomuacollective.org, and I'll be happy to talk with anybody and would love to hear what folks think about what we should be taking a look at and
well, Josh,
how they can help us talk with it.
I'll definitely put the information up on our show notes. Josh Wish is the president and executive director of Holomua Collective, and of course, a strong proponent of remote work. Hey, Josh, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Hey, mahalo, Burton. Happy holidays.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about co-working in 2025. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR One every Friday or anytime via the HPR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.